You look just like I did at your age.
Please don't say that, Dad.
I'm 16 years old. I'm not a child.
Don't you take that tone of voice with me, young lady.
Love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
You're listening to Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Two friends since being told to wipe the baby's bottom in art class. Now dad's reliving the Disney movies we grew up on with our own kids. I'm Eddie Ferguson.
And I'm JB Wagner. And on today's episode, we learn to let true love remain unspoken is the quickest way to a heavy heart as we review Sky High. But first, Eddie, it's been a couple weeks. We've been off. You've been very busy. What's been going on? What's very happening? What's up? What's up with you and the family?
Well, for 2 weeks, I had 50 people here from more or less 5-6 different countries, and I was responsible for all of them. So it was quite hectic. It was quite crazy. But all is good. Everything is back to normal. As normal as life can be with three small children. We just kind of had one of those. Right. Well, we just had one of those like goodnight routines where everything's just sweet and fun. And Ellie and I, particularly, you know, she snuggles up next to me. We're watching a little something before bedtime. And, you know, she whispers like, oh, I love you, Daddy. Oh, I love you too. And we're having a grand old time. And then she just kind of goes crazy. Where I'm literally having to just like grab the hand and put it through the arm from shoulder all the way to sleeve. Like you can't let go. Otherwise, it'll come right back out.
Oh,
putting it all in. And then, you know, that is just, okay, this is now exhausting. This is no longer cute and fun. And then we just have a full meltdown. And, you know, next thing I know, she's sitting on the potty screaming and crying, trying to get her to go pee right before bedtime. So, and then you're like, take a deep breath. All right, let's do our snuggles and hugs and songs and all of that. And all is good. All is, you know, back to as normal as life can be here.
This sounds like bedtime is battle royale a little bit.
You never know what you're going to get from night to night. There is no consistency. It's not like it used to be pretty bad, and now it's just crazy. Does that make sense? Like before you wanted to just like give up and quit. And now it's like, okay, this is fine, but it is also, you just don't know what craziness is waiting for you each night. But enough about me. We've got quite a few things have happened in the world of Disney and of movies since we took our few week hiatus here so I could go off and do my stuff. The biggest of which, I think the last time we were on here, we were talking about a potential SAG-AFTRA strike.
Imminent.
And now
it was imminently about to happen.
And now confirmed and has been going on for a while, the SAG-AFTRA. I have to say, though, before we get into the seriousness of it, if I can just be disrespectful for a moment, I did not know that Fran Drescher was the president of SAG-AFTRA now. And until I'm watching some of these speeches, and at times it's hard to listen to her. Like she's speaking very passionately from her heart, very articulate, well, you know, constructed arguments. But at the same time, it's not the full nanny voice, right? Because
no,
that's definitely
that's
put on a
yeah.
bit. But you can't help but listen to some of these and not hear it in the nanny voice. And it's, yeah, and at times it's like, okay, this is hard to take you serious because of that, but
that's so funny.
I do. It's just my immature. I didn't know until the strike that she was the current president of SAG-AFTRA.
I didn't know until the strike was looming, and then I started looking into it. And I was like, why is she in all these photos everywhere? Oh, she is the actor representative. That is she's the president of the Screen Actors
of the Guild. Yeah,
okay, that makes sense. Yeah. It's similar in sports too. Although the president is normally of the Players Association, that's the equivalent.
Well, wasn't Jeff Saturday the president for a long time?
Yes. So he was in the NFL. He was the president. They usually have some sort of a player representative and then someone who's who does all the battling, the lawyer.
Like type. The negotiator.
Negotiations, but they still kind of run the thing.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a very similar thing. So it would be interesting to see the history. Maybe you can look that up while we're looking, while we're talking about it. Who's the history of some of the people who've led the SAG organization over time?
Well, I mean, the most famous is Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was the, Ronald Reagan was the president of the Screen Actors Guild the last time they stroked. I don't know how to say that.
They had a stroke?
The last time they had a strike at the same time as the Writers Guild. So not the last time they stroked, but the last time there was a strike at the same time as the Writers Guild.
Coincided.
Which I believe was, they coincided, which I want to say was the early 60s. It was Ronald Reagan who was the president of the guild at that time.
So it's fascinating right now. We're in the midst of it. So WGA, they're all on strike. They've been on strike for a couple months now. Now we've got the SAG. They're on strike as well. And I mean, obviously we're all wondering when it's going to eventually end, but I was just talking with a friend over lunch and we were talking about how it's weird. This summer, we've had a lot of big films from a lot of big directors come out kind of all at the same time. And you're like, wow, maybe this was all kind of not premeditated, but happened because of the pandemic and movies getting shifted and moved back. I know Mission Impossible was kind of in the middle there for quite a while as they were trying to make it and had to push it back a little bit. But Christopher Nolan, his latest film, Oppenheimer, which I just saw this weekend, and I laughed because I was like, wow, that's awesome. We got all these movies that had been kind of waiting to come out or be made and finished. And now we're going to have it happen all over again because of this strike, which the latest today is that the lead negotiator for the SAG side has just said he wouldn't be surprised if this goes to January or February, which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, everything that I've seen is there are zero ongoing negotiations. Like when they went on strike, that was the last time that the two sides have spoken, and they have not spoken since.
And not that the SAG side has not reached out and said, hey, we would love to continue talking. The studios have been the ones to say, we're going to take a little bit of a break right here because we've got money.
We're going to stonewall. Yep. They can wait this out better than the actors can. I have to say probably, so right now what we're seeing, you're talking about all the movies coming out. The strike went down, was official in the middle of the Oppenheimer, London premiere, I think it was. And the actors walked out on the premiere. Like they walked like the first few feet of the red carpet and then they all exited. Then I think the most humorous, Disney set up this huge purple carpet premiere for the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland, and they had it all set up ready to go. And it was a few days before is when the strike went down. And so they went ahead with their premiere, but instead of having actors walk the purple carpet, they had all of the random like Disneyland characters. Like you had Cruella DeVille and the Evil Queen and all of the different, you know, characters from Disneyland who would go to see the Haunted Mansion movie, I guess. They were the ones who walked the red carpet or purple carpet for that premiere. So it's funny, all, you know, the creativity that they get with all of this. But yeah, with the strike, actors don't even promote the films. They are not helping the studios.
Yeah, there's definitely some interesting rules that they have for this, and they've kind of laid out for their people. So, like, promoting a movie that you were in, you can't do that. You can't even on social media. They have some rules about it, which is interesting to see if they can actually enforce any of that for these people that have millions and millions and millions of followers. But then also, what's interesting is if you're a YouTuber and you are commenting on movies and you are also an actor, that is not a problem. Like, you are allowed to do a movie review of a film if you weren't an actor in the film. So I find that interesting. There's a few people that kind of straddle both worlds, but that's totally fine. And I'm assuming that also means podcasts as well. I know, Eddie, you and I were really worried about if we were going to lose our SAG card by doing this podcast. So letting everybody know that's not why we were gone for 2 weeks, although it did happen right at the same time. So you can breathe easy. There's a great, if you want to learn more about and hear more of the inside scoop on this specific topic, if you go over to Apple, go to your pod, wherever you get podcasts at, and listen to The Town. It's a Spotify. It's through The Ringer. It's with Matthew Bologna. He's the founder of Puck, which is an inside Hollywood media organization. And his podcast is on July 14th, Inside the Actor Strike with its top negotiator. It's a really, really interesting look at what's going on. And he asked Duncan Crabtree Ireland, who is the lead negotiator, some really tough questions. Like, they've got the money. Can you guys really make it through all of this? Like, some really great questions that he asked inside of that. But I think one of the most interesting things that came out of that is the studios have been saying, we offered groundbreaking rule concepts with SAG on the use of AI, which we brought up many times, how much AI has been a part of this. And he was like, yeah, it's groundbreaking that what they brought, because we've never had anything. We've never had any rules. So of course, anything's groundbreaking. But the big thing that I thought was so fascinating, and it's like, how did they think they're going to get away with this, is they are asking for actors to be paid a day rate to come get their bodies scanned, and then they have the use of that in perpetuity. They can use it as much as they want. They never have to pay them again. That was their initial offer from the studio side, which is crazy. Yeah. That's what the actors have is, I mean, I know their actual voice is another thing, but their physical likeness. Their
physical presence. Yeah, yeah.
It was insane. Like, why would anybody agree to that? That's putting them out of business immediately. And I was so baffled by that.
Yeah, I read, like, Harrison Ford has, this is kind of unrelated, but connected. Harrison Ford has in his contract, like, Disney can't do like a walk around Indiana Jones character. There's like really strict rules in Harrison Ford's his contract, like how much the likeness can be to him. You know, like, so the likeness of a character or of an actor is heavily negotiated in all of these contracts, especially when you get to like the level of Harrison Ford and his likeness as Indiana Jones is the whole series, right? Like, you don't have that series unless you have that likeness of Harrison Ford. So if that's negotiated at this level, you know, what's happened is they're trying to grab all these actors early on, which doesn't have so much of an immediate impact on somebody like a Harrison Ford. But 20 years from now, if there was the new Harrison Ford and he signed that early on, boom, you know, they have it.
It's really shady. I'm baffled every time that I hear more and more about what they were asking for from the studio side, because it makes zero sense why anyone should agree to something like that. I wonder if maybe there's a level where they're asking for the moon and then they'll kind of come back a little bit, or if they're just like, nope, we have the car keys, we're just going to take our ball and go home. Mixing some metaphors here, but we're going to wait you guys out until you have no money left. And that's why I think the lead negotiator is saying, hey, this could probably go into January or February. I can't imagine when it's going to really start hurting. And maybe these studios just came through the pandemic and they're like, if we can get through the pandemic, we can get through strike. We can get through
anything.
I mean, think of the ramifications of that kind of thinking.
Well, I think what was shocking to me, and we had put it on here to cover, but Iger did a 30-minute sit-down with CNBC during the Sun Valley kind of summit that was going on, maybe a week ago now. And he was asked about the strike, and he was downright rude and dismissive. I mean, it was really shocking. He's usually a very polished, you know, guy on answers kind of like that. And I think what was fascinating to me is like we watched Chapek just totally fumble the whole Scarlett Johansson handling of, you know, of of talent. And everybody was talking about, well, you know, if Iger was here, you know, we wouldn't go through all that. I mean, what he said, what he went, I mean, he was like, they are being callous and ridiculous, what they are, you know, expecting.
Crazy things.
I'm like, dude, that you're Chapek level, or if not worse, in the things that you're saying right now, especially a few days into the beginning of this strike. Like, you just gave them the fuel they needed to wait you out. And you're, you know, you have nothing without these two guilds.
And what's hilarious is that he made these comments while at a private, what's called billionaire summer camp in the mountains. So where all these private jets had to fly in for all of these billionaires so they can all hang out at their own little billionaire summer camp. And he's making these super callous remarks. That's like, you have no weight to stand on other than the fact that you've got the money and you've got the keys and you've taken your ball and ran away home. It's
well, and Disney doesn't have the money. Like, Disney is in debt to the tune of like $70 billion. You don't have the money to wait this out. Right. And that was what came out through the course of that whole interview, is Disney is hurting in every category of their business. Every category. So they don't have the money to wait this out.
So parks, merchandising, they're all kind of, they're hurting right now.
Yeah. He tried to sidestep a little bit the conversation about the parks and numbers going down. He was like, well, it's kind of this, it's kind of that. And yeah, it's a little more complicated than, hey, attendance is down. But yes, attendance is down. You know, 2002 was huge numbers for them, but that was all revenge travel, right? That was all pent up demand.
That's what you're saying.
2022, yeah. So they did really great business in summer 2022. And then 23, nobody's going to Florida. Like, tourism in general is down across in the United States because now all of Europe is open, and it's, you know, Europe saw the record numbers this year. So, I mean, they did not see great numbers in this quarter in the theme parks. He's danced around the question when he was asked it in that interview, but more or less you could see him sweating.
Bob Iger has definitely been a little bit more unhinged of late. Like, a lot more than I've ever remember him being this way. And maybe he's going from, maybe the pressure of stock expectations and stuff like that is starting to kind of get to him, because he's played the golden boy card for so long. And it's like that ever since the board members, the investors tried to get their seat on the board this past wintertime. He's definitely been singing a different tune, been making changes that we didn't know if it was going to work out or not. And I don't know if this stuff is working right now. It's been, we're closing in, like, this fall is going to be about a year since this November is going to be about a year since he came back in, and he has a new contract too. He just got a brand new contract as an extension.
He was only supposed to be there until 2024. They extended it now out to 2026, which I think immediately when he was brought on under the 2-year contract. But everybody I read or listened to was like, yeah, there's no way that's just going to be 2 years. You know, that's just no way. The biggest fault of him is he's has a hard time of landing a plane on a successor. That being said, in that interview, you saw, a very unraveled. He pretty much put everything out on the table. All of the ABC, FX, any type of linear broadcast, cable TV, they all immediately went out and updated their resumes. Like, they were terrified how he phrased his answers, because he pretty much said, we're looking to sell all this off.
This is one of his another one of his latest PR moves that he's talked about, right? Statements.
Well, and this was all in that same CNBC interview. So in the course of one interview, in 130 minutes, he just totally is rude and disrespectful to the Screen Actors Guild. kind of dances the whole park question and then says, yeah, we're in his kind of coy CEO. Like, I really can't say what I want to say here. But like, immediately everybody's like, oh, he's talking about selling off ABC, FX, all of these networks. His ESPN answer was interesting. What he said about ESPN is like, there's too much money to be made off of sports. Live sports is still very interested to us, but we're looking for a partner. We're looking for a partner.
Whatever.
Which that means. Again is kind of signal of like, it means they don't have the money to do what they want to do. Like, if you're going to push into being the streaming service for sports, you got to pay for these rights.
And there's new players in Apple. There's new players in Apple and Amazon, both of which who've just secured big, like Apple just, or not Apple, YouTube TV just got NFL Sunday Ticket. Huge, massive thing. Amazon has Thursday Night Football. Apple was a part of that. And they now have MLS. There's so many more competitors now than just the other ABC, NBC, Fox, and CBS.
Well, and Apple in the MLS season ticket is interesting because it is a one price, global, no blackouts, anything. Like, you pay one price no matter where you are on this planet and you get full access to that.
It's a dream. I want all the sports networks to have that.
To do that, yeah. And, hey, let's not just forget the biggest athlete in the world. That is not an exaggeration. The biggest, most popular athlete in the world just dropped into MLS. And I mean, the numbers are staggering now that Messi is there in Inter Miami. Like, what he brings is incredible. And I think it just secured all of those leagues are going to go, yep, we see what MLS and Apple are doing. That's what we're going to wait out for. And Disney doesn't have the deep pockets for it. So that is why immediately after, all over again, the rumors start surfacing again about an Apple-Disney deal. Because there's only one in the tech industry who's got the deep enough pockets to just go all in on this. And Apple really could. If they want to be the one-stop shop solution to this all, they could be it. Because they've got the money for it. They're valued at like $3 trillion or whatever ridiculous number. And so everybody's like, are they going to buy Disney? Are they going to partner with Disney? Is it going to be Apple TV Plus, plus ESPN Plus, plus, plus?
I'm interested in the Messi deal partially because part of his deal to come to the MLS is he gets a portion of all of the Apple subscriptions to that service to see MLS. Like, he gets a piece of every single person who pays to see all the games. That's crazy. But as we've already seen, like, it's skyrocketed in the amount of viewership.
Millions upon millions of people added MLS season ticket as soon as he started playing.
So we'll see. Maybe it was a good move. But yeah, Iger, he's been in a weird place for the past several months, and I think it's
fumbled that interview.
I think he's got more pressure than he's ever had in his job. Not that his job was ever easy because he's running Disney, but this is definitely probably the hardest it's ever been for him, maybe. But so, Eddie, we were talking about the SAG actors. They're on strike, but as you've talked about before, they don't lock these films down until weeks before they release. So the question is Wish going to actually happen? It's still months away. Is it going to actually happen?
So would there be a serious change in story that would necessitate an actor coming in and re-recording dialogue? I am no expert, but I have watched Into the Unknown, The Making of Frozen 2.
So we are all experts as well. Yes.
So we are all experts. And they're bringing in actors like days before to re-record stuff and to put things together. So, you know, either two things happen. Wish doesn't come out, which I think they are just going to try and avoid that at all costs. Or what probably is more likely is the story is going to suffer because of it. And they're going to have to pull together what they do have and make it work, and maybe risk not getting the best possible movie out there that they wanted.
That's so fascinating. When you asked me that, I was like, you're right. It might not come out. Wish might not happen because of the SAG strike. This is nuts.
I'm Haunted Mansion is probably going to be the last Disney movie for a while.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that before. That's nuts.
Yeah. Unless there's something else sitting in the can somewhere. I mean, I take that back. You've got a couple Marvel movies, right? So the Marvels, it's probably November. It's probably just sitting in post-production right now. I doubt that there's, so they can get that out there. You've got your magical list of movies. What else is coming up there?
I mean, that's the big one for sure. If we're just talking about Disney movies coming up that could potentially be affected by this, you got the Loki.
I think that one will still come out.
Series. We got that coming up in October. That's probably safe. The Marvels and Wish. So I would say Wish is a big question mark. Echo. That's in November. That's all going to drop at once. That's probably fairly safe. Everything after that is a giant question mark in 2024, like going into the next year.
Well, Deadpool's already stopped.
There was supposed to be another the Wish is the question. Wish is the most like, that's a, if I was going to say, what's the most likely candidate to maybe not happen this year? I know we talked about that before. Like that seemed like a pipe dream a couple weeks ago, but man, what is the fate of Wish? If you had to be a betting man, what would you say?
They're going to be hard pressed to not have a Disney movie release over Thanksgiving. I mean, that is like a mega church not adding extra services on Easter, you know?
it's written in stone.
They got to bring in that money. I think we're going to get Wish. I think it's just not going to be, you know, exactly what they wanted. Wish was just screened. I followed a Twitter thread maybe a month ago where somebody had watched a screening of Wish and they said over half of it was still on storyboards. It wasn't even animated. But they said what they saw was incredible. Like it was just a good return to classic Disney fairy tale story. And so they were really positive in what they saw, but they said over half was still on storyboards.
Wow. Plot thickens on all this. That was a month ago,
6 weeks ago.
So let's actually talk about some positive Disney things. First off,
I was excited about this.
You're excited about this? So Andor, the Emmy nominations just came out, and Andor received 8 of them. It received 8 Emmy nominations. It was the best thing I watched all of last year. But you never know how this is going to translate to the Academy. Are they going to really want to celebrate Star Wars stuff in our lives? Now, it's not Uber Star Wars. It's not got any Jedi. It's not got the Force really much in it at all, if at all. So maybe that would play off. And look at it. 8 Emmy nominations. I'm so proud. Eddie, I'm proud of my people here. I'm proud of my Star Wars people getting recognized for the work that they did on a great series.
Now, only if they would actually get an Emmy Awards ceremony to be able to receive that.
That was cold.
No, that's the reality. This year's Emmys are going to be like by mail.
By mail. I think we've experienced this before. I don't know about the Emmys? They for sure got canceled back in 2020, right?
No, what happened with strikes, it's different because nobody will go. So they don't even have the ceremony.
But in 2020, it got canceled because of COVID. Like they didn't have the actual Emmy Awards.
They delayed it. They did like a delayed ceremony. But like the last writer's strike, the big one that we've talked about a couple times in 2008, they just didn't have a ceremony. Because there was no writer. So imagine now, no writers and no actors. There's no ceremonies. If this drags on until January, February, like what the negotiator said, that puts the Oscars at risk because the Oscars are in March.
Yeah, we're waiting right now to find out if they're actually going to cancel it or not, because the reports were that they had to make a decision in July sometime to figure out all the schedule, what they were going to do. I guess they could kind of push it back, but not if the studios have backed off. Like, there's no way this is going to happen.
No.
But anyways, this is positive time, Eddie. This is the positive time for Andor to celebrate it, to actually give us a little bit of hope and life in this time right now. We're in a dark season right now.
I thought what the other thing that was positive is that Elemental has had a nice long run. Like, it has stayed going in the theaters. I mean, our last time that we recorded, we were a little, I wouldn't say we were negative on Elemental. We just weren't enthusiastic about it. Is that a fair assessment?
Of our review, right.
Yeah.
And it only made 29, you know, it couldn't even make $30 million in its opening weekend domestically. Right. It was a flop. The opening weekend of it was a flop. And then something happened. It definitely dipped, like every movie kind of dips other than Sound of Freedom, whole other conversation. This movie dipped down to like 15 to 10 million. And then it stayed at like 10 to 12 million for multiple weeks over and over and over again. And now it's grossed over $300 million.
When it's $358 million worldwide.
Which is more than Indiana Jones has made at this point. And it's died off. And it's died off. That's insane.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And yeah. No, this is a very interesting. I think Disney did really bad scheduling this year. I think that's what this shows, is that there is an audience for animated films. I just don't know if they hit the timing right on this one. And then you see Indiana Jones is done. And I don't know, even like Haunted Mansion, do you think Haunted Mansion is going to premiere in the top two with Barbie and Oppenheimer still? I mean, we're going into their second weekends and Haunted Mansion's going to drop. I'm sorry, I just don't see a world where Haunted Mansion breaks into the top two. Even though it's the new one, the hype around Barbie and Oppenheimer are incredible. Like, the numbers that came out of this past weekend, you know, everybody's...
They combined over $300 million each. Combined, they made over $300 million for two movies in opening weekend. I can't remember of a duo that has done that well on an opening weekend. It's pretty insane. I literally was trying to think of any. I couldn't think of any.
It makes me wonder, like, sure, there's your diehard fans who went and saw Barbenheimer. Sure, there was the super movie fans who did that. I think you have a larger number who went and saw one of them, and now we're going to hear the hype about the other, and this weekend go back and see the one that they missed. And then probably the larger group of people who didn't see any of them are hearing all this hype and going, I want to go see Barbie, or I want to go see Oppenheimer. And that's what they're going to go see. And there's no oxygen left for anybody to hear about Haunted Mansion.
There's a lot, especially when you throw in all of those that we've already mentioned, plus The Little Mermaid. It was just a lot. And plus Guardians of the Galaxy. It was packed summer. Which is why they've been talking about spreading things out even more. I mean, I'm still going to go see Haunted Mansion this weekend because, I'm just for content. We need more content for this show. But then also, our local AMC theater has actually like decked it out a little bit someone has a lot of memorabilia on their hands from Haunted Mansion, different things all throughout the windows and stuff. It's pretty cool. But we had kind of buried Pixar after their recent run of movies. And this kind of shows that there's some staying power. I think parents are just like, hey, we just need a movie to take our kids to. And it got spread thin out over. Maybe people weren't really wanting to see it at that time of the summer. Maybe too many vacations and stuff, and it just took a little bit of time. It had a slow burn. I mean, they've got hopes of maybe by the end of it, when it gets onto digital release and stuff, it could get up into 400 million, maybe even stretch to 500 million, depending on what happened. This could be, could this be the return of Pixar and showing their staying power? Maybe.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say, I think this proved that Pixar is still Pixar. They are just have to rebound from the mistakes they made with streaming during the pandemic. And they need to take a cold, hard look at spacing and scheduling of their films. I wouldn't be surprised if we see maybe Pixar doesn't do, what are they at, 2 movies a year right now?
Well, I thought it's 3 per 2 years. Like, they released 3 movies in 2 years. I believe that's what it is.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some shifting of that schedule. I don't know. I couldn't guess what that would be, but
I don't know. This is a Pixar problem.
I don't think it's a Pixar
movie. It's a Disney overall problem of just the amount of content they're putting out. Yeah. Now they've got time to kind of elongate the process a little bit because they don't have any more actors at their beck and call.
Right. Because when was Elio supposed to come out? Next summer?
That's next summer.
So that gets pushed. That'll be, next fall or something. There's no way that hits. I think we're just going to see everything stagger back.
Shift out.
And I think you're going to see, not just because of the strike, but I think Disney also is going, we're putting too much out all at once. Just saturating the market too much.
Not just Marvel, not just Star Wars, all Disney content.
Everything.
Just a little bit too much.
Everything.
Well, they got one thing sort of right, or maybe it righted itself, and that was Elemental. So good job, Elemental. Good job, Pixar, for having some staying power.
And I credit that to Pixar. I think that is, again, we were not enthusiastic about it, but we were positive about the movie overall. And I think it was one of those movies where enough people were like, oh, yeah, no, you should take your kids. Oh, yeah, no, it's totally worth it. And it just kind of held in there. And I wouldn't be surprised if it hangs in there a little bit longer because there's no other PG movie coming out. Like Barbie's PG-13.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
As much as you would say. Oh, that's true. When does it come?
August 2nd.
Okay.
Still debating. There it is. I don't know that I'm going to take my son to go see it, but it does look really interesting. The animation style, it's right in what we've talked about before with Into the Spider-Verse and some of the other Illumination and other movies that have come out recently to rival Pixar. But good job, Pixar. You still got it. You still got something going there. Well, that's it for our Disney move. That's it for our Disney news for today. Thanks for listening. If you liked this, liked our content, liked the stories that we've been telling and the news we've been updating, subscribe, share this with a friend, tell your friends and family about this. We would love to grow this show and get the word out to more people. And let us know if you have some thoughts and feelings about it. We also put this on YouTube, so you can go comment there. So today we're now going to get into the meat of what we are here for today, which is continuing to go through all of our movies from 1988 to 2005, aka our childhood. And we're in the last couple of movies here because we're in 2005, last couple of movies. And today's film that we're going to be revisiting is Sky High.
Cue the Disney sound effect.
Okay, so the IMDb description for Sky High 2005 is this. Set in an era where superheroes are commonly known and accepted, young William Stronghold, the son of Commander and Jetstream, tries to find a balance between being a normal teenager and an extraordinary being. It was long. I had to click on the more button, which you know I hate, but I think that tells you probably didn't need Jetstream and Commander because we have no idea who they are, but
too many proper nouns. But it conveys exactly what this means. Did you rush out and see this movie? Is this something that you remember watching over and over on Disney DVD?
No, I do have a memory of seeing this, not when it came out in theaters, but I was with some friends on a trip in college. I'd already been in college at college at that point. This is our transition period time.
Yeah, yeah.
And was out with some friends in another state. We had driven for like Christmas break or something like that. And so we were over at somebody's house and they had a little bit stricter parents and they didn't have very much that we were allowed to watch there. And so somebody rented this movie. And I didn't remember any of this plot, any of the storyline. I just remembered the title Sky High and the concept. I remember nothing from this film because it was just a random movie somebody rented. I don't even know if I was paying attention to it because it was obviously not what I was looking to watch in college. But that's all I remember is just, oh, Sky High. This is the movie I watched on that random trip to Pennsylvania in college. This is silly. We also went and saw King Kong in theaters during that trip. So,
hey,
very memorable trip. But so yeah, I had no memory of this movie before I saw it, before rewatching it. I guess it's a rewatch, but it kind of watching it for the first time. But
I remember this movie like coming out. Like I remember the marketing and stuff for this, but I did not go see it, and I'd never seen it. This was my first time ever seeing this movie. Even though, like, I definitely remember it coming out. We were at that moment where it's like, this isn't a movie that I'm going to go out of my way to go see at 18 years old, heading off or at college for the first time. Like, yeah, no, I'm not going to go see this.
I had no intention of actually watching it. And if I had my druthers, we probably would have skipped this maybe. But we don't skip on this challenge we have ahead of us right now. We watch all the bad films.
I'm shocked. So according to Wikipedia, open source. You can't cite this in a college paper, but it says that this movie now has a cult following.
0% sure. There's 0% chance that this has a cult following.
I mean, it says, while it did receive generally positive reviews from critics and audiences during its original theatrical run, in the years since its release, its reputation has improved considerably to the point of being regarded by some as a cult film.
It went from nobody knew it existed to maybe it got a run on Disney, on the Disney Channel. Is that what they're saying? Is that the cult following it's getting?
I don't know. So this movie was made by $35 million. And it had a box office of 86.4. So we made our money back.
Half that money just went to Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell.
To pay him to be in this film. Maybe even
and
some
Kelly
of
Kelly Preston.
Was she really? Is she really that big of an actress?
Not as big as Kurt Russell. But yeah, I mean, at the time.
This also features Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who's going to be in Ahsoka. She's starring in Ahsoka, and then also some other people you've just like seen before. Like I've seen you in another Disney film before, but alas, anyways.
And the music. Did you see who composed the music for this?
This is your time to shine, Eddie. Give us that information.
Michael Giacchino.
Wow.
This is one
of how the mighty have one fallen.
This is one of his first films that he scored. You got to remember 2005, he is not a major like motion picture composer. He's in Alias, Lost territory. That's what he has made, you know, what he is known for, what he's made is he was more of a TV composer.
Okay, well then I take that back. Maybe this is the stepping stone to greatness. Is he just we all need a sky high in our life to get to the heights that we will eventually all reach. Wow. Wow.
So let me categorize. Let me just jump in here. I would say this is a really, really good DCOM. This is a really good Disney Channel original movie. Like as I'm watching this, I'm going, that's what this feels like. And I wondered, did they write this as a Disney Channel original movie and somehow accidentally sign Kurt Russell and realize, oh no, we Kurt Russell can't be on the Disney Channel. We've got to actually release in theaters. And as I'm wondering this, I kind of do a little bit digging. The writers of this movie are the showrunners for Kim Possible. If you remember Kim Possible,
yeah.
Huge, huge hit for the Disney Channel. Actually, a very entertaining show. I don't think that's how it went down, but it definitely has a feel like it goes that route. And I don't know if we, Kurt Russell has a long storied history with Disney. He, back when you would sign with studios, actors would sign directly with studios. I mean, he had like a decades long contract with Disney in his teenage years. Like in the late 60s, early 70s, Kurt Russell was the Zac Efron of Disney, if I can make that comparison. Like he was the poster boy for Disney. So, I mean, he's got a long storied history there with Disney. So, I don't know. You know, it kind of makes sense.
Was it the Power Rangers level action sequences that convinced you that this probably was more of a DCOM than a real Disney film? Because that's all I can think about right now as you're talking about it being a DCOM film. Just especially that ending action sequences. I'm like,
sure.
Or when people turning into goo.
Babies.
And into babies. Oh, like, so much bad vibes through so much of this film. So I will say this. I know I've just been hitting on it and just like hating on this film right now. I don't know why I was still intrigued to find out what was going to happen.
I'm there with you. Like,
what is it? Why were we drawn into this vortex? There's a lot of films that I just like skip. Yeah. I didn't skip this. I just let it play.
I didn't either. There was the teen romance scenes. I kind of maybe did a little bit of skipping just because.
Hold up, Eddie. Let me just say this real quick. I got to give this anecdote. So we watched this with my kids. And every time it goes into that, the classic, bum, 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 like that, the love anime mm-hmm, and like mm-hmm, sound, mm-hmm. sound. My son would just immediately close his eyes and goes, I don't like this, daddy. I don't like this. And I'm just like, it's not even remotely like intimate or anything like that. It's real campy, but he's immediately like, no, I don't want anything to do. Like everything else he loved about this film, because it's all the weird, funny, like slapstick humor of just people getting hit and like punched and all that kind of stuff. But the anytime it went to the bum 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 bum, he was like, no, I can't look at this. I can't look at this. This is like adult content. I'm not allowed to watch this.
I think you just hit it though. Campy. That is what that is the best way to describe this movie. And to a certain degree, I feel like they knew they were campy. I feel like they were going for campy. I mean, just Kurt Russell and Kelly Preston's performances alone, they know that's what they're aiming for. Like that's what they're, that's the note they're hitting there is this is Adam West Batman campy.
Was it the fact that the initial villain's character name was Warren Peace?
Right. And is it just me or is the kid like a predecessor for Taylor Lautner and mm-hmm. the Twilight series?
I was also getting Rufio like vibes from it as well. So this thing had a little bit of heart and it had an actual like decent good message to this whole thing with mm-hmm. the whole here's all the heroes on one side, hero support, sidekicks over on, like, I love that they're like, this is called hero support, not sidekicks.
So funny.
Over on the side. And they just kind of leaned into that. But I think that made you root. I think that's what this thing worked, is it made you root for our main character right up front. And he's like going right in with, like, he starts off with they introduce his powers at a weird time, almost a little bit too soon. But maybe kind of right perfectly at the right time where he's got no powers long enough to make you feel sympathetic for this guy who has parents who are celebrities and all powerful. And he gets his powers revealed way later, but like conveniently right after coming to the school in a big moment, he needed them. And then the other half of the movie is just him being like, oh no, I need to actually be kind to my friends that I made who were there with me when I was a nobody. So I think that is what helped this film make it a lot more tolerable of like, I was actually rooting for the kid.
I agree wholehearted. I think you nailed it right on the head with that. It is, you empathize with Will Strongman. You empathize with his character. The arc is, there is an element. I'm right there with you. I kind of struggled. Was it too soon? Where is it? But I felt like it was well paced out. And so it's a believable character arc that you go on with him and you connect with him. You identify with him. So I struggle with this because it is a campy movie. It is not one that I would like go around going, oh my gosh, you have to see this.
It's no dinosaur.
But exactly. Oh my, we rewatched that again. Like this is now Dinosaur is one of our favorite movies. But at the same time, if somebody was like, hey, we're thinking about watching Sky High, I wouldn't tell them to skip it. Does that make sense?
I would let, it's almost like when the hero is standing there and the villain is potentially, it's like you have the opportunity to save them or don't save them and let them, like, I'm not going to kill you, but I'm not going to help you either. I think I'd probably be in that situation of, I'm not going to tell you don't do it. It is up to you. I'm not going to dissuade you either way. That's probably the way I would treat it.
Can we just say though, this movie had, I enjoyed Kurt Russell in this movie. I thought
he was 100% Kurt Russell. Really good job. He did a great impersonation of himself.
Yes, and I have to say my favorite moment in this movie, like the laugh out loud moment for me, was when he's getting like a talking to by his dad down in the sanctum or whatever it is.
The sanctum, Eddie. Like, don't take people to the sanctum.
And he says something to the effect of like, hey, just tell your mom that I took your Xbox away. And he's like, but dad, I don't have an Xbox. But now you do. And he like whips it around and he's got the Xbox right there. Like that scene, I busted out laughing. I don't know, like, something about Kurt Russell's like delivery and pacing of that to me was just, it was so cheesy. It was so cheesy, but perfect all at the same time. Like you, every once in a while you need some cheese. Every once in a while in your life, you need a little campy. And this movie was just enough for me where I'm just like, I'm good. I needed that, but I'm good now. And that scene for me was such a great moment.
So to share the just range of emotions on this film, I've already given you some of the weirdness from this film. I'm going to give you four moments and just how varied of an experience I had. So one quote that I just started like going, where did this come from? And it was kind of funny was when he's sitting down talking to Will and he says, maybe next time I punch a meteor hurtling to Earth, I might be the one hurtling into a million pieces. And then he completely moves on. I'm like, where did that come from? Over when they're in the cafeteria area and they say, and there's a, over the, they're like, the cafeteria requests sidekicks stop ordering hero sandwiches. Like, what is the point of this? The moment I laughed out loud was when he's like mad. He's like, I'm going to call your teacher. And then he breaks the phone, throws it down, opens the drawer, and then grabs a brand new phone and is then
like
trying
a drawer
to die.
Of like 10 of them.
Yes. Both me and my wife just immediately started laughing. When they find out he doesn't have powers and he just says, he can always go into real estate, which is their profession. And then one that I was actually like, oh, that's actually pretty good. And they're like, powers don't make you a hero. Sometimes it just makes you a jerk. I was just like, I like this. So those were just the range of like memorable moments from this film. But then can we just talk for a second about Save the Citizen? How did you enjoy this? Because the best moment of it, as they're like using a dummy with like a rotating like,
yes,
knives going.
The two teachers. Do you remember when we used to use real citizens to do this?
And they're just like laughing. And I was like, that's horrible.
The teachers are what make this movie weird to me.
Coach Boomer?
Like all of it, where I'm just like, yeah, this is just weird and creepy to me. Like, it makes me uncomfortable at times. But I mentioned the Xbox, and then for the opening, I quoted, or you quoted, my other favorite moment where he's sitting there, War and Peace. It wasn't until halfway through the movie that I realized his name was Warren, not War and Peace. But like Warren says, yeah. Yes, he says, to let true love remain unspoken is the quickest way to a heavy heart. And you're like,
deep thoughts.
Okay. And then boom. And your lucky numbers are 9, 8, 15. And he's reading the fortune. For me, that was the other kind of like, okay, that's clever. I laughed out. I chuckled out loud at that one. I also need to say just a little bit of connection here. I don't know if you noticed, but when Kurt Russell went to Sky High, did you notice what the musical was that they did?
No.
In the yearbook, as he's gone through the yearbook. Oklahoma. I was like, Oklahoma, they did Oklahoma too.
I can still sing a lot of it.
JB and I were in Oklahoma.
Did you have a part in it, or was that you just an extra like me? Like farmer number
sophomore
5.
Sophomore year. Was mine. No, I was Paul Carnes. In That's Oklahoma. Right.
You always had the lead parts. Mm-hmm. Eddie was the thespian.
The lead parts. No, I was always like I'm the character actor. You know, I'm like, oh, we'll give Eddie that bit part that, you know, we'll have a real funny line.
The one time I had a more major part than you was the year that I got the stomach flu and was only in one performance in Cinderella.
You were the king. In Cinderella,
came out in pajamas.
I was the herald. Mm-hmm. I was the herald.
Neither of us got to be the prince in that. So
no, but that's okay. Okay. Got our princesses. Do you see what I did there?
I saw what you did there.
You need to agree. You need to affirm.
I love you, honey. I love you. You are my princess. You're my queen. Speaking of princesses and queens, what are we going to rate this film? I have no segue for this. I'm just I think we've talked enough about Sky High.
This is going to be a little controversial, but I think I'm going to give this a 2.
Eddie, did you really think this was a 2 movie?
What else? I mean, it was okay. It's not a 1. I don't like, ones are like, this is awful. This is just unbearable.
One, we're pretty, there's a range of ones. If you go back and look at our ratings, the biggest thing about a one is like, are you ever going to watch this film again? Like, choose to go watch it. If it's a no, it's automatically a 1, unless there's something to draw you back in. And as much as I've had like, oh, this was kind of interesting, I was kind of engaged with the character. Like, I didn't hate it. I almost wish we had like negatives, or we should probably have some more zeros in our listing of like never again ever. As much as I've talked up this film, I'm torn. I think I'm gonna have to go 1.5 because there was just enough interesting things in this film to make me not hate it and not turn it off or fast forward as much as possible. There have been way worse films we've watched than this. I'm gonna go 1.5 for my review. So I don't know. I guess I shouldn't be too mad about you doing the 2, but.
So just for context, we gave both A Kid in King Arthur's Court and 101 Dalmatians live action 2s, both of us.
I'd probably watch both of those before I watched this film.
Really?
Clean close.
I look back.
One.
Kid
and
in King
the
Arthur's
skates,
Court.
Eddie. Look at all those, well. All those inventions. All those inventions. We have so many room for activities.
Yeah. I would definitely... I'm just going back through our list again. Yeah, I'm going to stick with my 2. I'm happy with that. I'm okay with that.
You stick with your 2.
So I'm a 2. And what did you say? You said 1.5.
1.5. It was just above... There was something that was redeemable about this film, maybe it was the fact of what they did for the main character. Kurt Russell. We'll give him one half for Kurt Russell. Are you giving Kurt Russell his own half? Is he getting his own half? And then you're giving it was a redeemable story as the other half of that second one?
If I were, if Disney Channel were playing somewhere and this came up on Disney Channel, I would stop and watch a good chunk of this.
That's a two.
Right?
So there you go.
And I have a feeling you would too, JB. Just going to say, I have a feeling.
My son would, for sure, except if it was a, the part about the loving. That's what I wrote down. I don't like the part about the loving. Then he would, immediately. About the loving. Fast forward. No.
Well, with that, your life has been forever changed with another episode of Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast.
Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your other favorite podcasts. And while you're there, subscribe and leave a 5-star review or share it with your best friend.
You can also check us out at honeywemade.com, where you can see our movie list with all the previous movies we've reviewed, and all the Disney movies from 1988 to 2005, including next week when we will review The Greatest Game Ever Played, starring one of JB's favorite actors.
Of which I don't know because I've never seen it, but thank you.
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf. But thank you, fair listener, for listening. And remember, shut up and power up.